Since January, we've quadrupled in,
Wow.
yeah.
That's
And by the end of
crazy.
this, yeah, by the end of this year, I think it'll probably be more like, we've multiplied what we were doing in January by a factor of eight, maybe more.
This is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast, and I can't say podcast apparently. Probably said it too many times, but my guest today is Brian Deck, and he's the CEO of Smooth Commerce. Brian, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Michael. Great to be here.
So we were talking a little bit before we jumped on, and maybe you can share with us, what is Smooth Commerce?
So Smooth Commerce is a commerce and engagement platform. And what that basically means is that we help primarily restaurants, but we're in a few other verticals as well, helping them to better engage with their customers, providing all of the traditional commerce and more innovative commerce solutions like in-store loyalty, scan for pay, scan for loyalty, or order for delivery. But the key thing, and this is what differentiates Smooth Commerce, is that we really focus on those engagement tools and strategies to help our clients increase their sales and profitability.
So now you're in probably one of the most affected, tumultuous spaces right now since the global pandemic of COVID.
Yeah.
But you're also positioned uniquely where you're kind of telling this different story of like how to use digital tools. So like what's been the experience over the last like 5, 6 months?
We've been busy. We've been doing more. We're doing the same stuff, but more of it. The customers that we were working with have been investing in more and more in the programs that they're running on our platform. And there was companies that we were talking to that weren't customers yet that accelerated the conversations to jump on quickly. And then we've been working with a lot of channel partners that we were working with before, but just found an increased need for our platform based on the outcomes of COVID.
Did you notice like a real change where, you know, before maybe people were kind of like, do I need this or not? And then all of a sudden there was like a real like motivating factor, or, you know, what 100%. Did you find?
100%. It was, you know, digital and ordering and delivery is a nice to have. It's a convenience play. A lot of the brands were looking at it as being something that they needed to do to keep up with the others, but they maybe not had put the right priority and emphasis on it at the time pre-COVID. And that whole way of thinking changed because essentially for restaurants in particular, digital has become a lifeline to survival in the new environment with lockdowns and social distancing and all the rest of it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think, you know, all of the artificial stopping of the market and forcing people to go home, it's created all these new trends, right? And it seems like you're really well aligned with the new trends. So to what extent, how many new customers have you seen jump on? Like, did you have conversations you didn't have before? What was the real impact?
So a couple things. One is, to give you some sense of the scale of it, since January, we've quadrupled in.
Wow.
Yeah. And by the end of this, by the end of this year, I think it'll probably be more like, we've multiplied what we were doing in January by a factor of eight, maybe more.
Wow. That's crazy.
So yeah, it's been, we were already on a trajectory that was hyper growth, but this has only accelerated it. To answer your question about what's happened in terms of the conversations, not only has it, you know, accelerated the conversations we were already having, but there was conversations we weren't having and didn't expect to have. Like, for example, there's a whole category in the restaurant space, which we weren't really addressing and didn't plan to, which was the dine-in. Specifically like fine dining restaurants, right? And these are restaurants that were doing, you know, $200 steaks and $500 bottles of wine. And to their brand, they were a premium brand before COVID. They didn't see digital as being something that they needed for their clientele. And furthermore, they actually saw digital as being something that cheapened their brand.
Right.
And with COVID happening and with in a lot of jurisdictions, you know, with dine-in being restricted, these guys were forced to go digital and go for delivery. And, you know, it's, you know, that's just one example.
So I'm sure we're going to see a shakeout of a lot of, and we're really kind of seeing it where like storefronts are shuttered. We keep hearing about cloud kitchens. What do you think the future of restaurants is? Is it really survival mode, or are there going to be people that really benefit from this change?
So, you know, the cool thing, Michael, is that like we have 40 plus major brands that we're working with on our platform. Wow. And so we see the data across all these different companies. So what I can tell you from the data is that certain categories did way better than others. And for example, the pizza category.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Off the charts.
Off the charts.
You're already set up. People were already kind of thinking this is a delivery product. You know, I'm hungry. I don't want to cook tonight. So they order for delivery. That's what they've been doing, you know, before COVID, long since before COVID. Then there's other brands that kind of hit a lot of the right notes in terms of it being a perfect fit for delivery. You know, you think about, you know, Chinese food, you think about, you know, shawarma, you think about Greek, you think about different categories that actually have a good product set for delivery. But what we've seen is that's actually expanded now because people don't want to be ordering the same thing over and over again.
Right.
So they're actually looking for variety. We've got some great vegan brands that are doing amazing plant-based entirely menus that are doing great. We've got some deep fried chicken chains that are doing great. And the list goes on and on. A few categories got hurt more badly than others. You know, if you're in the coffee business and you didn't have like a day part menu for lunch or what have you, they're trying to reinvent themselves. And I think what you're seeing now is that, you know, a lot of brands are actually reinventing their menus.
That's interesting.
I
can see that with like whether it's Starbucks or whatever, like even, I mean, Tim Hortons has a big drive-through business in Canada, right? And there's probably Dunkin' that's not really set up for that, I would say here, right? So then you see Starbucks, which is the third place, like they're probably, they invented order ahead, but I can see that really a negative impact on their model, right?
Well, the changes and the impact of changes is actually pretty wide and surprising in some regards. Like for example, and to your point, drive-through has done great. Businesses with drive-through set up for drive-through, they've done great. But like there was a trend pre-COVID, which was the whole in-store mobile ordering kiosk where you go up to a big screen and you start touching the menu and you start ordering. Who wants to touch a screen?
Nobody. They're like, I'm not touching. They're putting gloves on. You should have, you walk into the gloves and you touch it.
This is the new screen.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
This is your new screen, right? So what we're finding is that a lot of brands that we're already using our platform for ordering for pickup or ordering for delivery are now coming to us and saying, we need you to help us with in-store. For when we have dine-in, we want to have digital menus. We don't want to have plastic menus that we give to everybody, right?
Yeah, and I'm seeing that where you walk up and you scan and the menu comes up on your device, which, you know, it's funny. It's almost like resurrected the QR code.
Yeah.
Such a funny thing. Like you're like, yeah, scan my QR. You're like, all right. It's like phones actually work now with it too, which is kind of different. You don't have to download a stupid app to scan a QR, right? So
yeah,
I think it's for Samsung and Apple for fixing that problem.
QR code is definitely now highly relevant, whereas before people were starting to question it altogether.
Yeah.
We've always been a big QR code supporter. It was actually our first product was, you know, years ago was QR code scan for pay, you know, like some of the big giants in store payments and what have you. You know what else is cool now is you're seeing the use of cubbies.
Cubbies.
So, yeah. So restaurants now are starting to think about, like, think about all the different people that are coming to their store for picking up, not just customers, but Uber drivers. Right. So now the whole trend is like, okay, you know, rather than have chaos here at, like, you know, people coming in into the store, you know, waiting, you know, in a big herd in the front, you know, like, they're actually starting to make walls worth of digital cubbies that will open. Wow.
So that's like the fellow that we connected with, and I'm blanking on his name off the top of my head, but where it's like you walk up with your code and you put your, you pull your product out of like the locker, right?
I think you're going to see more and more of it. It's not cheap, but you know, if you want my opinion, I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of restaurants that are going to push the boundaries on cubbies and, you know, like Uber Eats drivers that are sitting there waiting, rather than having them wait in the store, have them wait in their car, and they get a notification when the order's ready, and they go up to the cubby and they open the cubby. They never have to go in the store. Right. So, like, I think you'll see, like, this is going to change the restaurant industry forever.
Seems
100%. 100%.
Well, now, so you being an entrepreneur, you've been involved in other ventures. I don't know if you've been in such a rapid growth business. What are the things that allowed you to deal with such an increased volume of business? Like, what's gotten you through all of this?
So, the first 6 weeks of COVID for us were really intense because we just had this inbound, you know, influx of partners and customers and everybody who needed help. And we wanted to help. We weren't just looking at this opportunistically. We actually wanted to do good and help businesses stay afloat and keep their people in jobs and so on and so forth. And we're really proud about all the different restaurant reopenings that we were able to affect. I think part of what really made it possible was that we had developed our technology to be scalable. You know, everything around, being able to onboard quickly. For example, we had a major brand here, come to us and want to be up and running. We were talking to them pre-COVID, but once there was shutdowns, they came to us and said, we got to accelerate. We had the contract done in 2 days.
Wow.
We had something in their hands for them to be ready to do live transactions on in 4 days. And that was, you know, everything, their branding, their menus, the locations, the payments configuration, everything. So, you know, I think we're looking to continue to go more and more in terms of accelerated, you know, onboarding times, but, you know, once we got it under a week for a major brand with over 100 locations to be up and running, I think we really perfected the rapid onboarding.
Oh, that's awesome. And then as far as like your sales and marketing process is very traditional kind of B2B. Is that how you're, or are people just finding you because of search terms, or what's the magic, Brian? How do we get such a high growth business?
Well, the couple things. One, I think it's important to kind of tell you a little bit about the typical customers we were going after before COVID and the ones that we are going after COVID. And then, because there's really two distinct types of customers we have. On the one side, we have enterprise size customers. And I'll give you a little bit more description of that in a minute. And then the other side, we have the SMB customers. The way that we were really primarily focused before COVID was mainly the enterprise customers. You know, we wanted to be working with brands that were, you know, multi-locations, good brands, well-known brands, good customer bases, good products, that were going to be, you know, partnered with us for the long term. And we were very successful in getting some of the best brands out there on our platform. We were actually staying away from the individual locations. There's a bunch of technologies out there, POS companies that, and such that are 100% focused on the.
So many, right?
That's not really been our focus traditionally because of a couple things. One, it's a really expensive sales cycle if it's not 100% automated. Number two, that segment is usually run by operators that are working inside their business and don't have the sophistication or the time to really get behind and effectively run a program. And quite frankly, the third reason is that a lot of them, that category goes out of business a lot faster than,
right.
than the big turnover.
That makes
sense. So we really didn't address that individual mom and pop restaurant chain. We didn't need them. We didn't want them. But when COVID happened, we actually said, we have a responsibility here. Anybody who's calling us or partners of ours, like in the payment industry, we're working with some of the biggest payment players out there and they're referring us their merchants. We didn't want to say no. So we actually did turn a lot of these independents on because they were coming to us looking for help. Like they needed a solution. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, the partner channel has been our biggest way of scale, specifically with the enterprise customers we're working with. Couple things that are really important to know about a partner-driven sales strategy. Number one, you're going to get credibility, instant credibility, if a partner who's trusted, as a trusted vendor of your potential client, is referring you, right? Credibility, instant credibility is huge. The other thing too is your cost of sale has gone down.
Totally.
By having a good partner relationship, right? You're getting inbounds from the partner that are already customers of theirs or sales clients that they're talking with. You don't have to do all the marketing and outreach that you would if you're doing a direct sale only approach. And number three is there's a sticky factor with working with partners and having integrated solutions and technologies. We found that once we get a customer on that's with one of our partners, I can't think of a time where we've lost a customer.
That's awesome. What sort of partnerships do you have? Are they mostly, is there like one size fits all, or do you have a really defined partner program?
So we're really invested in integrations as a whole for not just sales channel relationships, but just to extend our product set. So we have over 70 integrations, technology integrations.
Wow, that's crazy.
The categories of integrations are payments, POS. We have some gift and loyalty card partners. Even though we have our own loyalty program on the platform, we still will support third-party loyalty programs. And we find that, you know, that works well too. Marketing agencies, so in terms of our technology integrations, they don't always result in a sales channel partnership, but most of the times they do.
They're enabling at the very least, right? It sounds like.
That's yeah. Awesome.
Well, Brian, I appreciate everything you're doing, and I want to acknowledge you for the work that you're doing to help restaurants in such a crazy time to adapt to the new realities of the market. And I want to be conscious of your time. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that we want to make sure that we share with people?
You know, I think if you're kind of thinking about the automate and grow aspect, which is, you know, close to your heart, I think
the whole title of the whole podcast.
Yeah, right. you know, I just can't emphasize enough how much those early decisions are important, Mike. You know, when I think back to some of the things that we might have done better early days, it's really just spend more time right from day one thinking about automation. You know, and we've done a lot of catching up, and we've got a few things left to do, but you know, the earlier the better, and you know, it never does you wrong.
That makes sense. It sounds like it's really played into the way you're able to deploy quickly and support a lot of customers. So, all right, we're going to wrap with a few quick questions. The first is, Jim Rohn says that you are the sum of the five people that you spend the most time with. So who do you, Brian, spend the most time with?
My awesome wife, Amber, and my two kids, Sammy and Rachel.
Awesome.
Also spending a lot of time with my, my daughter's boyfriend these days.
Who's
staying over here. Yeah. But we're lucky, 'cause he's a good guy.
There you go. That's good.
And then, you know what, the partners in at Smooth, like we spend a lot of time together. It's not all work. We have some good times, and you know, there's a lot of partners at Smooth, so I can't even start to name them.
That's awesome. How are you, Brian, changing the world?
Well, I'd like to say that I'm solving for, you know, forest fires and hunger and stuff like that. Maybe that's something I can put on my list.
A big one. A lot of fires here in California.
Well, I think, Mike, the COVID situation has really kind of given me a lot of extra depth of meaning to the work that we do here at Smooth Commerce. We're helping restaurants with, you know, getting the technology that they need in place to meet the current environment. And by doing so, we're helping them with their sales. We're helping them with being able to stay open, and we're helping bring jobs back. So I would say for now, that's a pretty big one, and I'm going to keep focused on that.
That's huge. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you, Brian?
Well, you can check out our website, smooth.tech, smooth.tech. You can reach me at brian@smooth.tech with an I, and I'm on LinkedIn. So Brian Deck on LinkedIn.
Perfect. The final thing is, when we have interesting guests on the Automate and Grow podcast, we like you to nominate other interesting guests. So we typically talk to experts or entrepreneurs about the person they serve and problems they solve, and particularly trying to focus more and more on SaaS founders and the tools that they're building and helping companies. So who would you, Brian, like to nominate? And the first person that jumps to your mind is usually the best.
I have the guest of Automate and Grow. I have the perfect person for you.
Perfect. Interview. Okay.
So he is the chief digital officer of Northland Properties, which in Canada, they operate the Denny's Canada brand.
Oh, super.
They are also Moxie's, Shark Club, and Chopped.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Man Hotel, Sutton Place Hotels, and the Dallas Stars.
Oh, and the Dallas Stars. Is this a Tom Gagliardi business or?
Northland Properties, yeah. Oh, and their chief digital officer is Manoj Jazra.
Manoj?
Who is really, you know, the top of the game when it comes to digital and customer engagement and everything to do with it. So if you want to talk to somebody about automating and growing, he's a good guy to talk to.
So it's Manoj, and how do you pronounce his last name?
Jazra. J-A-F-R-A.
Okay, so Manoj, you've been nominated by Brian as a future guest of the Automate and Grow podcast. Brian, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm excited about the stuff you're working on, and I hope you'll come back and join me again.
Thanks, Mike.
Thumbs up from Canada. This has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. We will see you on a future episode of Automate and Grow.